Silence.
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Pride Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 173 of Nerd Pride Radio. 173 in 1845. The longest railroad in the world was 173 miles long. Really? That's the quality of number facts I'm getting? I am getting so bad at this. Oh, but that's all I can find for now. So ask me how I'm doing today. Go on. Ask me. I am awesome. My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D / Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd. Plus, there's like 7 other kinds of nerd. I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. You are listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. My co-host this week is not Aiden. Yeah, that's right. By popular demand, Aiden is no longer welcome on this show. Taken care of. Okay, now it's time for the meticulously plotted portion of this podcast. This is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy week, I add it to my master list, and the very best stuff off that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. First thing on the master list, it's a nerd culture report.
I thought this was bowling for weirdos.
No, Gonzo, but you are very, very close. Hey, what is it about self-checkout at the grocery store that I like so much? Man, I really enjoy it. Maybe I'm in a minority. I don't know. It seems really popular. So I go to Walmart. Well, in fact, only Walmart for me because that's the only store in town that has self-checkout. But I go to Walmart, and now we finally have a nice little corral area so that people line up, and then you just take the first open machine, and everybody knows how the system works, nice and smooth. I just like checking my own stuff out. And Aiden's with me. He's like, why do you always do self-checkout? Why? I'm like, I don't know. There's something relaxing about it. Maybe I like being in control of my own groceries. I have no idea, but I much prefer doing self-checkout anytime I can. In fact, and the reason it came up in this conversation is because as I often do, I had a big box of frozen burritos. And when you do self-checkout, you've got the frozen burritos. You got to ring them one at a time. You throw them in the bag, make sure it weighs it. Okay, scan the next one, throw it in the bag, make sure it weighs it. And I've got, you know, like 15 or 20 of these in a row. And so for me, I have a little system. I have the box there. And then I have just one burrito that I wave over the little scanner. And then every time it beeps, I just grab one out of the box and throw it in. So I always have the same one in my hand. I just keep running over the scanner. I like my little system. It works for me. And invariably, about every third or fourth time I do this, whoever the very nice person is who is working for Walmart in that area will come over and they'll ask me, hey, you want me to just count those up and scan them in for you so you don't have to do them one at a time? And the first couple of times, I let them do it. Because it's like, okay, that's nice of you. Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, how do you say no to someone who's offering you extra convenience, right? But every time they do it, it winds up taking longer because, oh, shoot. Okay, now I have to override the scale. Hold on a minute. I'm like, you know what? I'd rather just do it. And so this time, Aiden's there with me, and I'm doing my little scan thing. And the woman comes over and offers to very sweetly, you know, count them all up for me. I'm like, no, you know what? Actually, I appreciate the offer, but I just prefer to do it myself. I really like doing it myself. And she looked at me like I was crazy, and Aiden looked at me like I was crazy, but I don't know. I just like checking them out myself. It's just weird. Am I alone in this? I find it relaxing. I don't know what it is about self-checkout that I enjoy it. you know, just picking them out, getting them in the bag. It's not like there's anything you really have to worry about too much, except, you know, okay, double bag these cans or whatever it is. But other than that, it's not like it's a huge challenge. So anyway, that's just me. Boy, while I was right in the middle of that story, I just thought of something else, and now it has completely gone out of my head. Oh, and it was fascinating, too. I wish I could remember what it was. In fact, I think it was Eli the other day that was with me, and we were doing the self-checkout. And I love having Eli or Noah there with me for the self-checkout because they love to do it with me. So they love to, you know, we'll work out a system where we'll, like, scan, you know, we'll each alternate scanning items, or maybe they'll scan it and I'll put it in the bag or whatever works. But it's fun. It's, you know, time with my kids. And I think it was Eli who said, so by the time I have kids, is self-checkout going to be the only way that we check out of grocery stores? And I said, no, by the time you have kids, you're just going to get your card up to the front, and you're just going to push it through a thing, and then the whole thing will just ring up and deduct itself from your bank account, and you won't even have to worry about doing all this scanning crap. You'll just push it through the little scan area, and the whole thing will just automatically ring itself up. In fact, to save time, you could bring your bags with you while you shop, bag up your groceries as you put them in the cart, and then that way when you get to the end, you can just walk out the door, and they'll just charge you for what you have. There you go, nice and easy. And he was amazed by that concept, but I'm like, well, but that's what they're working on. This is their dream, is to put the little RFID chips in everything. I mean, they've already got RFID tags on most stuff anyway, for theft, for whatever. And, you know, if they could just get a reliable way to make sure that you can just push it through and all, you know, 70, 80 items in your cart could all get scanned at once and not screw it up, man, they would be doing it. They're working on it. So someday. Anyway, that was just really quick. That was the other thing I was thinking of. I don't know why this popped into my head. All right, today it is 60 degrees out today. 60 degrees out yesterday, in fact. And even though it is 60 degrees out here, 60 degrees Fahrenheit, by the way, I'm not going to convert to Celsius in my head here. But 60 is not a bad day for Nebraska, especially after winter. 60 degrees is, whew, man, it's almost time to go swimming. Holy cow, it is warm out. And so, even though it is 60, we have huge mounds of snow. Yesterday it was 60 degrees while being completely snow covered. Today it's 60 degrees while being, still lots of snow cover, but also lots of mud and lots of puddles. So today, messy, messy. But yesterday, I was out walking, and my neighbor is out in her driveway, and she is shoveling mounds of slushy snow off of her driveway. And while she's doing it, her 5-year-old kid is running around barefoot in his shorts. I mean, that was the weird kind of day it was. That, like I say, 60 degrees for Nebraska? Yeah, you know what? If you want to be outside for a little while in just your shorts, I guess that's fine. You know, you're not going to die. It's 60 degrees. You're fine. All right? But he's running around outside barefoot in shorts while his mom is shoveling snow. It was crazy. An absolutely crazy day. It was weird. So anyway, that's it for the Nerd Culture Report. I'm just kind of babbling on now. Let's go on to something a little more meaningful. Let's do the Science Corner.
Ooh, she blinded me with science.
She blinded me with science.
Blinded me with science.
And that music means if you don't walk away now, you might be in danger of learning something. I wish I had done a little more research for this. I feel a little unprepared. But I have been, you guys know I have a fascination with language and linguistics already. I mean, nothing professional. I'm just an amateur. But I've been listening to a podcast called Lexicon Valley. Really good podcast. And a couple of his more recent episodes, I love when he talks about what most people would think of as slang or broken English or improper English. And yet within that improper English, and improper is in quotes there, within that improper English, no, there's a structure to it. There's a real grammar. There are rules to how you use, those phrases that people feel are just improper slang, but they're not really. I mean, it's all evolving language, and you guys know I've always been a huge proponent of evolving language, and that, you know, our language, our vocabulary, our English language that we have now is whatever the hell people are using it to be. There is no wrong English. As long as you are conveying your point, as long as you're getting your point across and you're making yourself understood, you're doing the right thing. And yeah, there's different contexts. There's, you know, certainly, the kind of language that I use while I'm presenting on a podcast here compared to the kind of language I use when I'm just talking with some friends, compared to the sort of language I would use while I'm giving a presentation or lecture, you know, in a professional setting. There's different contexts for stuff. Hell, the language I use when I'm writing is often quite different than the language I would use while speaking. So you have context for it, but that doesn't mean that those more casual or more casual seeming, uses of the language are any less, structured or any less proper English than anything else. And I wish I remembered the guy's name from Lexicon Valley because I would like to give him full credit, but go check out Lexicon Valley. If you're interested in language and linguistics at all, I have found every episode so far fascinating. Well, not every episode. He did one where he moved away from spoken language and he was talking about, learning to read, and it really just became a huge commercial for phonics. It was teaching people to read is a lot more complex than just whole word reading versus phonics reading. And if you don't know what any of that stuff means, don't worry about it. It's not worth getting into right now. But, he was interviewing someone who made it out to be a very simplified argument, and there's nothing simple about it. There's lots of, you know, it's not a binary situation. It's not an either or. It's not like, you know, why am I going on about this? This wasn't even my main point, and I'm sitting here speaking in vagaries that you guys, I'm not staying on the topic. Let me boil down that one though, because now I can't leave it. When teaching kids to read, there are two schools of thought. One is you teach phonics. That is, you teach kids what sounds the letters make and what sounds they make in different combinations. And thus they can sound words out. And once you have sounded out the word, you will recognize it and you can put it into context. That is phonics. It's building from the ground up as opposed to whole word reading. And I don't even know if whole word is the right phraseology for it. My wife has gone through this in school at various times, but I don't know what the current terminology is. In whole word reading, you just recognize words. You are taught to read, you're read to and taught to read simply by recognizing words, and more than anything, developing a love of reading. And then as you develop your love of reading, all the technical rules, all the little fiddly bits, you'll just learn those. They'll just come to you. It's more to the whole word strategy. It is more like how young children learn to speak, as opposed to you don't teach them the rules of how their lips make certain sounds or how they hear words and they learn them. And so the same concept supposedly applies to reading, that you when you see words, you recognize them. That's, you're just taught to recognize a word. And there is this idea that this is some sort of binary, that one of these two ways is the best way to teach. And phonics winds up being considered a very old-fashioned way of doing things. And in schools, at least when my wife was in school to become a teacher, and it seems like this has continued, there are lots of people who are teaching people how to teach and teaching them that phonics is outdated. And that, yes, while you can have some phonics included, really this whole word recognition, this whole word process is really the best way to go for kids, because you really, again, it's fostering a love of reading, fostering joy in the process, and thus they'll want to read and they'll get more out of it. And the truth is that it's somewhere in between, is that, you know, you really need the phonics. People need to be able to sound out unfamiliar words. They need to be able to puzzle this stuff out. But also, especially in English where we don't have regular rules, you know, there are lots of good rules for how to sound out English words, but there are so many words that don't follow the rules. And so those become, when my wife teaches them, yeah, she teaches phonics, but she also teaches big clumps of sight words that literally you should just know them on sight. All right, when you see T-W-O, you don't have to sound out tw, tw, tw. No, you just know it's two. You see T-W-O, you just know it's two. Those are your sight words. There are words that you need to recognize on sight because your brain shouldn't have to process T-H-E every time it gets to it. Your brain shouldn't have to process some of these words. And so it's a combination. And so anyway, Lexicon Valley, he had one episode, and I don't want to deter you from it, because this was the only episode of his I didn't enjoy, and only because I think he was out of his element and he was relying on someone else as the expert who was really leaning on the whole phonics is the only way to go, that modern schools have fallen into this bad way of teaching things, and we need to go back to basics, and we need to, and it's not as simple as that. It's just not. So, anyway, okay, there. Now I've settled that, and now I can go into the parts of Lexicon Valley that I did like. Specifically, he did a whole episode on Black American English, and in fact, he has written an entire book about Black American English, which I may go pick up because this episode was fascinating. The topic is fascinating. I love the whole process. And again, it's the whole idea of the fact that Black American English is an absolutely valid dialect that follows strict grammatical rules. And that even though it sounds like it's slang, it sounds like it's just well, and some of it is slang, but a lot of what we do is slang. That's any dialect of English or any language for that matter. He says it sounds like speakers of Black American English are breaking the rules, but no, they're not breaking. They're ignoring certain rules of what we would consider standard English, or standard American English, but they're also applying a lot of rules of their own that we don't have and that we don't understand. One of my favorites that he pointed out was the use of the word had in a sentence. So we had gone to the store. All right, which, you know, you could simplify to we went to the store, but we had gone to the store. And for speakers of Black American English, according to him, the word had in that case actually indicates a different past tense that we don't have. All right, for Black American English, that use of the word had indicates the narrative past. It's not just a past tense, but it's a past tense that's part of a story. And he says there are other languages that also have this narrative past, this idea of you use one past tense when you're talking about things that you did, blah, blah, blah. But then there's another past tense that is the narrative past, the past tense you use to indicate that this is a whole story. There's a process here, and we're going to tell you a whole story. And the example he gave was in an episode of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Something terrible has happened, and the place is obviously a mess, and they discover Will hiding behind the bar or whatever it was, and he pops up and they're like, "What happened here?" And Will's response is, "All right, see, what had happened was," and he said to him, as a Black kid growing up, he said, "That was really funny because the what had happened was," despite, you know, in addition to the fact that Will Smith had pretty good comic timing and good delivery on that and all that, the idea of him saying what had happened was, his use of the word had indicated that he's about to tell a story, that he's not really going to explain the truth. He's just going to tell you a story that hopefully gets him out of trouble. And that made it extra funny to him, something that a lot of other people watching the show would have missed. And I thought that was awesome. And so, and that's just one example. I really recommend listening to Lexicon Valley if you have any interest in linguistics. His most recent episode, he had a guest on who was talking about the use of the word like and how different, we have lots of different uses for the word like, that, you know, from its standard use of liking something, or like meaning similar to. You know, like when you go to, like used as similar, essentially. I didn't realize this came from another episode. I didn't realize that like, in the term, in sense of similar to, is actually where we get the ending ly to add on to something. All right. So beautiful becomes beautifully, which used to be beautiful like, or I think it was pronounced leak. In that case, in Old English, Middle English, whatever it was, but that then, you know, beautiful like becomes shortened to beautifully, and it just became an adverb ending. I thought that was amazing, and the use of the word like, as in, He was like, and you're talking about how they, you know, it, basically he said, she said, it's all, well, he was like, and then she was like, and then, and that seems to be a more modern usage, and it seems to be on the rise. That usage has been around for about 50 years. Like as a familiar interjection. So, just the, this, cause it, well, it was like, you know, it was that particle-like is what she called it. But anyway, that usage has been around since the 40s, so 70 years now, maybe even a little bit longer than that, and has always been, since it popped up in that particular context, has been an indicator of kind of rebel youth. It started off with beatniks and that kind of jazz culture and moved into hippie culture. And drug culture was seen as using that phrase a lot. Until now, it's just something that people say. It's common everyday English now. And the overuse of the word like does indicate, quite often, a more youthful or immature phraseology, but it's just standard English now. And the idea I wish I'd written down some of this so I could explain it all to you, but yeah, go listen to it. Because again, the use of the word like in every one of those contexts and more, her book is 800 years of like. So it's been around for 800 years that it's fallen in and out of these different kinds of uses. This is not the first time it's been used this way. And every time it's got rules. There's rules to how to use it. You can't just throw it in anywhere. It's got a particular structure to it and a particular context in which it's appropriate to use it. I find that amazing. So, anyway, that's my science corner today. I love language, and I love seeing the underlying structure where people would assume that there is none. And I think that's awesome. Up next.
Don't know much about history.
That's right. It's the Unnamed History segment. And this week on the Unnamed History segment, we're going to talk about Hermit Jim. This is an amazing story that I didn't know until just this week. I just learned about this. Hermit Jim, his real name was Jim Baldwin. And Jim Baldwin was an actual hermit. And he lived in Fontenelle Forest in Bellevue, Nebraska. Now, when I was in high school, I graduated high school in Bellevue. And when I lived in Bellevue in high school, I just checked the map, like just before I sat down to record. I went and looked at the map, and my house in Bellevue was, as the crow flies, 1,000 feet from Fontenelle Forest. So this story takes place right there where I lived. It's really awesome. All right. Jim Baldwin was an infantryman in World War I. Okay? And so does becoming a hermit have a lot to do with PTSD? More than likely, although there was no diagnosis of it back then, obviously. But he returns home from the war, and a year or so later, around 1920, he goes into the woods of Fontenelle Forest, and there's a small cabin there where he lives with his father and his brother for a few years. And then his father dies, and his brother moves away. So it's just Jim left in the woods in this little cabin. So he lives in the woods by himself for 3.5 decades, roughly, all right, like into the mid-50s, 60s even, and he's living alone. He's canning his own food, jarring his own food from his garden, hold on a second. Okay, I'm back. Sorry about that. The pipes started rattling somewhere and would not stop. All right, got that resolved. Anyway, so Jim Baldwin has retreated to the woods of Fontenelle Forest. He's living there by himself. He's living off of a garden that he's got, whatever he can scavenge up. Occasionally, people from town will drop off a bag of groceries for him. Because for a hermit, really sociable kind of guy. Right? I mean, he didn't want anything to do with society. He wasn't going to come out of his woods. But if anyone wanted to come in and sit down with him, he'd sit and talk. The local railroad used to make a stop. Well, they didn't make a stop, but they used to pass by his property, knew he was there, so they'd occasionally just drop off a stack of newspapers, magazines, just old stuff, and he would take them in. Voracious reader. And so people who found him in his camp I'm trying to remember who it was, if it was a pastor or if it was someone came looking for him and said, you know, actually got to see inside. He was living in, you know, the cabin had long since fallen apart. And so he was just living in basically makeshift structures, small caves and holes that he's dug out. And so this guy came in and found him and said, yeah, you had to get down on the ground and crawl. And there were a couple of old timbers, support beams that were holding everything up. And you get inside and he's just got a little living space inside where he's got stacks of his newspapers and magazines. And whenever he was done reading one, he would just kind of pack it up against the wall. So it looks like being in a mouse's nest or a rat's nest. And this is how Jim lived for ages. And he would tell stories. He especially loved telling stories to kids that would find him. And a lot of times it was scouts. Scouts would, because Fontenelle Forest is a pretty big area. And so scout troops would make their way through there and they would seek him out. So, I mean, imagine having an actual hermit living in the forest where you're going out camping. You can imagine all sorts of stories sprang up about him. And they would go find him, and then they'd sit with him, and he'd tell stories. And sometimes he'd tell true stories. Sometimes he'd tell tall tales. My favorite one is the hoop snake. And in his version of the hoop snake, because this is a common legend that goes back decades, hundreds of years maybe, his version of the hoop snake is that the hoop snake hides from predators by swallowing its own tail, and then it just keeps swallowing until it finally has swallowed its entire body and it just disappears. And he said he watched a hoop snake do this once. This is a story he told regularly. He saw a hoop snake actually do this once. And so he got out of sight behind a tree and waited. He just watched the spot where the hoop snake disappeared, and he just waited. And sure enough, after a few minutes when everything was quiet, the hoop snake opened its mouth, peeked its head out, saw that there was no one around, so it slithered out of its own mouth and crawled away. And I'm like, that is a great story. That is an awesome story. Hermit Jim, as he's come to be known at this point, Hermit Jim, his story, again, this is a guy, you know, again, probably PTSD, has withdrawn from the world, and is living, you know, in rough conditions, to say the least. And there was in 1950, hold on, I got it here somewhere. There it is, 1959. So there's a Boy Scout camp nearby, and a couple of the Boy Scouts snuck away, teenage kids, and they decided that they were going to go find Hermit Jim. And for whatever reason, they were going to rob him. This was their plan. Boy Scouts. Those bastards. And so they were going to go rob Hermit Jim. I would guess, I mean, we don't have an interview with the boys here or anything, but I'm guessing, you know, just for the thrill of saying that they'd done it, for the thrill of getting to show off, you know, whatever it is that they have stolen from Hermit Jim, whatever it is. And hold on a second. Nope, that time it was just static. Okay. So anyway, these two kids have snuck up to his camp, they just walked into his camp and started asking him the best way to build a fire. And of course, it's Jim. He's happy to talk to him, and so he starts describing it. And as he's going on, one of the kids sneaks up behind him and hits him over the head with a big chunk of wood. And so apparently they're going to knock him out and then take all of his crap. And in hitting him over the head with a chunk of wood, they knocked one of his eyes out. Like, hit him hard enough that an eye popped out of its socket and is hanging there. And so, of course, they panic. They go run back. They tell their scoutmaster. While they're telling the scoutmaster, Jim is crawling to the edge of the woods looking for help, because all he knows is he just got his eye knocked out and then the boys ran off and left him. So, you know, the scoutmaster came back, tried to bring help. Somebody finds him by the side of the road. He goes into the hospital, spends a month in the hospital, and wound up losing the eye ultimately. But spent a month in the hospital. When he comes out, the community of Bellevue actually picked him up from the hospital in a chauffeured limousine, brought him to a huge welcome home party in the center of town. The mayor shows up, members of the Strategic Air Command, because the air base is right next to Bellevue. It's one of the most important features of the town. And so, you know, there's the band, and they have this whole celebration. And then After the celebration is done, helicopter picks him up and takes him back to his forest home, his hole in the wall, and drops him off there. So he wound up living in the woods again for, where is it? Let's see. 1961, so a couple of years. There it is. And so they, in 1961, there was a particularly cold winter, and people became concerned about him, and so they went out and found him, and there he was huddled up in his thing, and his feet were frostbitten, and so they carried him out again and got him help, and this time he couldn't go back. So he wound up, in 1961, he wound up after his hospital stay, he moved in with some family members, lived in Omaha for another 5 years until he died at the age of 78. And that is the story of Hermit Jim. And again, the idea that, and my kids are like, wait, you lived right by there? Did you ever meet him? I'm like, no, he died 4 years before I was born, and 20-something years before I even lived there. But the idea that, again, I knew Fontenelle Forest. I lived right there. I lived right next to it. The idea that I lived there for several years and never once heard the story of Hermit Jim just amazes me. So when Lisa ran across this article a few days ago, she's like, oh my God, did you know about this? And so we read it with the kids, and it's like, never even heard of the guy. This was amazing. So, if you're interested, most of what I've given you here is taken from an article from the Omaha World Herald newspaper. If you do a search for Hermit Jim or Hermit Jim Fontenelle Forest, you'll probably come across the same article. It seems like that article now is the source of information for most places that talk about him. So that's where I got it all from. Anyway, that's the end of the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast. So now it's time for the Pod-O-Matic! Hot dog. This is the Nerd Pride Radio Pod-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 and his fully pimped out Pod-O-Matic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. Where do these topics come from, you ask? Go on, ask me. Yeah, okay, I'll tell you where. You. That's where you come in. You want to hear me have a rant about something? You send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my forums, and I will add it to my Pod-O-Matic list. Pod-O-Matic is about whatever you want it to be. And my first number here is 23. So I head on over to my Pod-O-Matic list, which, oh, hey, look, I actually had it open. All right. And we roll down to 23. We find out that is from, it's from Billy Bob. Billy Bob says, Ford podcasts in your network? Wow. Where does the Nerd Pride Empire go from here? Oh, well, now there's only 3 podcasts in our network, so apparently we peaked. We're already done. Yeah, I don't know where the Nerd Pride Network goes. I don't even know. It's always just a little bit more work. I really got to fix up the Nerd Pride Network page. I need to put that together so that we have proper links and that kind of stuff. Make it look clean. Make it look professional. I owe it, not just to myself, because, hey, if I don't do it for me, that's fine. But, there's other people here, Me Like Trivia and Angry Geeks Versus, and they deserve to have at least a proper-looking network page so we can drive more traffic to it. Right now, I don't really share the network page because I know it looks like crap. I haven't got it figured out yet. So where does it go from here? I don't know. I wouldn't mind having other, once I fix things up and I make it look nice, I wouldn't mind having other podcasts in the network, but I don't know, how much cross promotion do you do? How much do we have to do to make a network a real network, other than, just a bunch of podcasts that say that, hey, we're all affiliated. We all like each other. Yeah. Sometimes we show up on each other's shows. Other than that, I don't know what else is really involved. So I don't know really. I mean, man, this is a bad time to ask. Like I say, Casting the Curious just faded out, and I just haven't had time to look at stuff. So right now, I don't know, but it's a good question. We'll keep working. 15 is from Kyle. Speaking of Casting the Curious, Kyle says, why can't we have a good blood magic system in Pathfinder? What was that game we had when we were kids that had blood magic? Boy, the game sucked, but I liked that concept. That was the hero system. All right. if I remember correctly, because you've got GURPS has always been the generic universal role-playing system out there, and there's been others that have tried. And for a while, Hero System did it. I don't know if Hero System is still a thing, but it was working from the old Champions point system. Champions had the most complicated system for creating characters and creating superpowers, and it was just a very detailed, complicated game. And so they wanted to make it a universal roleplay system, and so they created the Hero System to use that same point buy system to make characters for other genres of games. And the one we had was we had a version of it that was for fantasy roleplaying, so we could do Dungeons and Dragons style roleplaying, but using the Hero System, the Champions Point system. And for it, the only reason you had blood magic is because that's the kind of character that I helped create for you. Because, again, when you buy powers and abilities in the Hero System, there's a base cost for having any particular power. But then there's this funky, complicated system for if you want to apply limitations or restrictions on those powers, then it reduces the cost of them. So, you know, if you are Captain Midnight and your powers only work after the sun has gone down, well, that's a pretty big restriction on your powers, and so they only cost half as much or whatever it is. And so the book, I believe, suggested blood magic, but I can't remember how much detail it provided. And so when creating your spell, or maybe it offered it as a base restriction or limitation that you could put. So when you're creating your magic spells, then you just put the limitation on them, requires blood. And, you know, whether it has to be your own blood or someone else's blood, but that it required blood, required using, doing actual damage to somebody, usually yourself. And by putting that limitation on it, it didn't cost as much. So you could have more powerful magic by requiring that it use blood. Awesome. So, I'm pretty sure it was built into the book, and I just liked that concept so well, or you liked it so well, that's how we built your character. And it was just, you know, just a little limitation on it made the spells cheaper so that you could be more powerful. And it was really awesome. And yeah, the game itself, we didn't play it very well, or it wasn't written very well. I have no idea what the limitation was. We only tried it once or twice that I remember. So I don't remember what went wrong with it. We didn't enjoy it that much, but yeah, the characters were cool. But I think that's a lot of Champions too, is that Champions was a lot more fun to create characters using that funky system than it was to actually play those characters, because it kind of got bogged down at some places. I think the best Champions game I ever played was just me and Rob. And we sat down, and it was, oh man, it was one of those where I create an impossible situation and then stick somebody into it and go, okay, let's see what you do with that. And so Rob created a bruiser. He created a big, strong brick of a superhero character. All he is big, dumb muscle. Big, dumb, invulnerable muscle. That's all he is. Because that was Rob's favorite kind of character to play. And so knowing that that's what he was going to do for his character, I created a character who gets stronger when you hit him. Anytime he takes a punch, he gets stronger. And, okay, now they are locked in a room together, and there is no way out. This guy is going to beat Rob until he dies. Rob, what you going to do about that? And again, for me, I just create impossible situations. I don't create a solution for you. That's not my business. It's your business to figure out a solution to the impossible. And so Rob says, well, there are lights here, right? Yeah. First Rob throws up a few punches and gets his ass handed to him and realizes that he's going to die. And so, Rob says, well, there's lights in here, right? Yeah. What kind of lights are they? I'm like, I don't know, fluorescence mounted in the ceiling. He said, but there's wires in there somewhere, right? Yeah. Okay. So he's going to go up and punch through the ceiling and grab fistful of wires. And then he's going to jerk those wires apart and plant them on either side of this guy's neck and see if he can't electrocute the dude. I'm like, all right, that's pretty creative. I'll give you a good shot at that working. That's awesome. And sure enough, the bad guy I created had a specific vulnerability to electricity. He takes like double damage from electricity or whatever it is. Because again, champion system, that's how he got his powers cheap. He got extra points to go build his character by having this vulnerability, which, you know, I know Rob's got a muscle character, so building in a vulnerability to electricity really doesn't cost me anything, right? Now, fried the dude, and then Rob walks away. It was so awesome. That is some of my favorite stuff in role-playing games. And again, you can barely even call that role-playing because it was, I just gave him a puzzle situation and then he figured his way out of it. We were just playing, you know, it was just an afternoon. He came up with a cool character. So we put it together and said, all right, well, let's see what happens. And then we just played out that little scenario and then we never did anything with it. That was the end of it. It was just for fun. And as opposed to all my other role playing, which is apparently not for fun. And that was it, but it was really, really fun. And very cool. Did I have a point to that? Oh yeah, we were talking about Hero System. I remember where this came from. But most of the time that we played Hero System, not a fan at all. Especially, I don't like the detailed movement chart there was just so much complexity, and I understand why they did it and why they thought they needed it, but it's just, it was much more fun to make characters than to actually play them in that game. That's just me. 51 comes from someone named, there it is. I'm getting better and better at this, right? 51 is from Billy Bob again. And Billy Bob says, describe the perfect murder. Oh, well, I think we've all thought about it. You watch enough procedural shows, you watch enough crime shows, and hear about this kind of stuff that you think to yourself, okay, if I was going to commit a murder and get away with it, how would I do it? It's just a mental exercise. The old joke is, look, I think it might even be a joke from Gallagher, if I remember correctly, is you pick up one guy by his ankles and you kill another guy with him. Thus, you have two dead bodies, no murder weapon. Well, it looks like they were involved in a pedestrian high-speed collision. I don't know. But I honestly think, you know, you can come up with all sorts of, undetectable poisons or bullets made of ice, there's a bunch of different weird things that you can do, but realistically, what are you going to do? And I think the best way to commit a murder, if you don't have someone particular in mind, you just want to kill somebody and get away with it. I mean, clearly it's okay. First, make sure you're not going to leave any DNA evidence. Don't do anything stupid. Make sure you're wearing gloves, whatever. But I just go to another town somewhere and pick someone that you don't know, a random stranger. You know, wait for your opportunity to ambush them from somewhere or to, you know, someone that you know lives alone but it's a random stranger, so maybe you're taking a guess. But basically, you're just going to go a couple of towns over, whatever, you know, 50 miles from home, and find a random stranger who is alone and kill them. And then you leave, and then you never kill anybody else ever again. All right? Now, if you can do that while making sure that there are no traffic cameras that might photograph your vehicle, or, you know, if you can park somewhere far away and approach on foot, or if you can, you know, there's lots of things to do, but, essentially, basically murder someone you have no connection to, and then leave and never murder again. There you go. That's probably the best way. But even that, I can't even imagine it. That's just if you want to murder for fun, and you got to be a psychotic to do that. And if you're going to murder somebody that you actually have a reason to murder, well, the simple fact that you have a reason to murder them means you're a suspect and someone's going to catch you. I can't even imagine. Yeah. There's better ways to settle your stuff, right? Okay. 93 is from Ronster. Hey, Ron. Ron says, if you were given the voice of anyone or anything for one day, which voice would you choose and what would you do with it? Man, that is a bizarre question that I don't even think in those terms. Wow. Let me readjust my mind here and see if I can stall long enough to come up with something, because I've got nothing good on this. I think I would come up with something nerdy but recognizable that I could just use to prank some friends and have a good time with for a little while. I don't think I'd actually use it to make money, or I don't know if there's a way to find a voice that helps you save lives. I don't think there's anything productive coming out of it other than it would just be really fun. So something like Jean-Luc Picard. I could do Patrick Stewart for a day and just call everybody as Patrick Stewart and just have fun with it. Or Nathan Fillion or someone who has a recognizable voice that comes from one of these nerdy franchises, and it would just be fun just for 24 hours. I could see doing that. 92 is from Kyle, and Kyle says, you get to pick one non-domesticated animal that you can talk with, Dr. Doolittle style. Which do you pick, and why? I am going to pick... This is going to be nerdy, but I think I'm going to pick dolphins, because I think... Because I know you say Dr. Doolittle style, but here's the thing. I thought, you know, maybe something like, you know, some kind of rodent or squirrels or birds or something that, you know, I could get messages back and forth and I could learn stuff and but I think animals with that brain level, I know you said Dr. Doolittle style and animals seem to have an awful lot to say in the movie, but really, I don't think those animals have a lot to say. I just don't think they're that useful. Whereas I thought great apes, you know, some kind of gorilla, chimp, whatever. But then no, because I think we've got a good grasp on ape mentality. No, I want to talk to dolphins and I want to find out how smart they are, because we know they're smart. But I mean, I want to know. I want to talk to them and find out, okay, but what kind of things can you communicate with each other? What do you do for fun? What do you do? I mean, there's a lot of things we know about dolphins, and yet a lot of things that there's some nuances of their social structure and their thought processes that I think would be really interesting to actually suss out in a real conversation with a dolphin. That would be amazing. Absolutely amazing. And I'm assuming this is a permanent ability. So, you know, you think, oh wow, well your access to dolphins is pretty limited. Well, right. But look, if I get this ability, I go somewhere where they've got dolphins, or they research dolphins. They go swim with dolphins. They hang out with them and we talk. And then I can find out more about them and find out, I mean, how complex a brain are we really talking about here? How complex a social group? And one, I think we could learn a lot from them, but also, you know, maybe this provides more fodder for those animal rights activists who are saying we shouldn't be keeping them in captivity because, you know, they really are that smart. Well, let's settle that. Let's find out how smart they are. And I don't think it'll settle anything. But because people will still fight about it. Not that we won't learn what's going on, but because people will never come to an agreement on what that actually means. We'll still fight about it. But dolphins. I got this one. 68. And 68 is, there it is. 68 is from Master. Master says, what is your favorite Pixar movie? Oh, that's a great question, because I've just been talking about this recently. I am listening to the Animation Addicts podcast, and the Animation Addicts podcast, they call themselves the Rotoscopers, and they talk about animated films, and so Pixar comes up a lot, and they've had discussions about it. My favorite Pixar movie is going to be, did I just answer this one recently? Because did I answer it with Aiden? And I said it was, The Incredibles. I'm pretty sure I said that. It's either The Incredibles or the first 10 minutes of Up. And that's actually the rest of Up is the only reason I don't put Up in there, because the first 10 minutes of Up, whatever that opening, however long that opening bit is, that is some of the most amazing animation ever committed to film. All right. The opening of Up is gorgeous and perfect and timeless. It is incredible. All right. And then the rest of the movie is just an okay action adventure kids movie. All right. The rest of the movie is still pretty good, but Up's acclaim all came from that first 10 minutes. And now as people have had time to look back on it, they can all go, oh yeah, that first 10 minutes was awesome. The rest of the movie, it was okay. So that's what keeps it from being my favorite. So I'm going to go with Incredibles, but I like a lot of them. All right. Now, what's the worst Pixar movie? Well, since I haven't seen Cars 2, I'm going to say my bottom three are Good Dinosaur, Cars, and Wall-E. And Wall-E is a controversial choice because lots of people love Wall-E and think it is brilliant. I loved it when I first saw it. The first moment I saw it, there was so much technical stuff in it that I thought was beautiful. And then as it goes on in retrospect, it's so preachy. And so, I mean, there was, again, some beautiful stuff. The silent work with just Wall-E by himself on the planet, that was gorgeous. Just like the silent opening to Up. Gorgeous. And then it gets into the whole by and large and the ship and the fat humans. And it was preachy and it was preachy. And then it was really, really preachy. It was simplistic. And people are talking about how it had this awesome message for our modern culture. And I don't think it did. All right. It hammered that message in with a blunt object. It wasn't subtle in any way. Idiocracy did the same thing. Okay. But Idiocracy was far more entertaining, if you can believe that. So, like I said, there's so much good to Wall-E, and yet, the rest of it just, again, preachy. But, and Cars, that was actually part of Cars' problem too. Preachy. Here they are with this preachy, nostalgic bit about how modern highways have distracted us from the beauty of small town America, and we really need to get back to, no, we don't. That's a message for old people, all right? And I'm not that old yet. So Cars was decent, entertaining, but had some trouble spots. Cars 2 supposedly is terrible. I have seen Cars 2. Oh, Cars 2 is definitely at the bottom. Right after Good Dinosaur. Good Dinosaur is still the worst. Good Dinosaur was terrible. All right. And those of you who love Good Dinosaur, look, technically it was a marvel. The realistic landscapes, the detail that went into that thing, holy crap, blew me away. Unbelievable. And yet with this cheesy cookie cutter story that could come out of anywhere, characters that were very two-dimensional, and that crappy dinosaur animation that you have this super realistic world with these really bad cartoon-looking dinosaurs laid on top of it. It hurt my sensibilities. All right, anyway, but your question was the best. We'll go Incredibles. 27. And 27 will bring us right to the end of the Podomatic. 27 is from Ronster. And Ronster says, why do so many people in the South go by their middle names? I didn't know that was a thing. I mean, I do, but that's just me. I have no idea. Do people go by their middle names? Or do you mean they use two names, like Billy Bob or whatever? I have no idea. I don't know where that tradition comes from. I couldn't even tell you why. I'm going to have to roll again because that wasn't a really, really complete one, was it? Number 11. Let's go up to the top. And 11 is, it's from Master. Master says, how awesome was Firefly? Oh my God. Firefly is so awesome. I'm watching it again because, hold on a second. Sorry. My foot's asleep. I had to move it. Because Eli said, hey, if I'm getting my homework done in time, then as a reward, can you and I watch a show together in the evenings? Like, can we watch a show together? Heck yeah. What do you want to watch? And he said, Firefly?
Hello.
Heck yeah. Hi, Noah. And so I've been watching Firefly. We're up to episode 4 of Firefly together, and it is incredible. And I will wait and let him talk about it some more because I've talked about Firefly before, but this is now my fifth time through it, something like that. I love that show. I so love that show. The next episode we're getting to, or that maybe we're already in the middle of and we haven't gotten to the end of yet, is the one with the line, so what does that make us? Big damn heroes, sir. Favorite line in the whole show. Can't wait for Eli to watch it. So I'm really excited, and we've been having a lot of fun. So I'm watching that with him, and then with Noah, because Noah? Yeah. Noah always has his homework done. Come around here onto the microphone. Noah always has his homework done, and he always gets good grades, and he always does well. And so we just are watching the show just whenever we have time. He doesn't even have to be a reward for him. He's just good. So,
and I'm sick.
Oh, and he's sick right now. What show what show are we watching together, buddy?
The Flash.
He picked out The Flash. Oh, what a great choice. What a great choice. I mean, I've heard people say that Flash is good, but I've just never gotten into the DC TV shows. And straight out of the pilot, man, that thing rocked. That was, I mean, good show, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's got a mouthful of granola bar here, but it was just spectacular. We're only two episodes in, and I am loving The Flash. This is a really well-done show. The effects are awesome. I like the characters. I like the story. This is good. The only thing I really know of Flash is, you know, I had a few comics when I was a kid. I never collected Flash, but I did enough Justice League and other stuff that I'd seen them around. And I have seen Flashpoint Paradox, the animated movie, which is rock solid. Oh, man, the animated movie is great. It's one of the best. Really one of the best. It is powerful and just cooler than crap. But the TV show is really good. So we're having a good time with that. But yeah, Noah's sick. Like, out of nowhere, my wife comes home and he's laying in our bed watching TV. And she comes in and she's like, "What is that on your leg?" I don't know. It's itchy. Oh, it's eczema. Gosh, so we're putting medicine on him for his eczema. And while we're doing that, she's like, "Why do you feel warm?" I don't know, because I'm warm. So we take his temperature, 102. Out of nowhere. He's just got 102 temperature. What is wrong with that kid? He's like, he's acting perfectly normal. He feels fine. He got 102 temperature. So anyway, he's sick. He just came out of a cold bath, got himself a snack. I think he's going to go watch some TV with his mom. So anyway, you guys want to do one more? I mean, as long as I'm here, let's do one more. 39. 39 comes from... Oh, and before I move on, 39 is from Kyle, by the way. But before I move on, Firefly, if you haven't seen the news, people have been asking to bring Firefly back, bring Firefly back. Fox brought X-Files back. Why wouldn't they bring Firefly back? And so the demand's always been there, and Firefly has a huge fan base. People would love to see it. And so Fox, as the owners of the rights to Firefly, have said, yeah, we'd be willing to bring it back. That is not a problem. They said, our only condition, Joss Whedon's got to be on board. Because if we're going to do it, we've got to do it right, and it will not be Firefly if we don't have Joss Whedon. So no one has told me what Joss's answer to that is. But, man, if he is on board, then yes, if Joss Whedon's writing it, I will be thrilled to see whatever they put together. I don't care how they do it. I don't care if it's the same crew. I don't care if it's, obviously it's got to be years later. So is it Captain Mal and he's got some of the same people, but a mostly different crew. And, you know, we have some story of rediscovering people or whatever. Who cares? Who cares? I mean, honestly, if it's 15, 20 years later, is Jane really still going to be around at that point? And if so, what kind of person is Jane after 15 years of not betraying the crew? I mean, you know, anyway, that's up to Joss Whedon to decide. If he comes back, if he's going to put together a story, I am going to watch that story, and I'm probably going to be thrilled with it. But, man, that would be great. Anyway, number 39 is from Kyle, and Kyle says, oh, F. Mary Kill. Awesome. All right. F. Mary Kill. I'm going to be given three choices here, one of which I'm going to have to choose for a wild night of passion, one I'm going to have to marry, and one that I'm going to have to kill. So, the first one is the entire population of Murfreesboro, Tennessee, or the rusted out tailpipe of a 2001 Honda Odyssey, or the bisected left half of Ted Danson. Okay, so obviously there's a theme here. Let's see. Oh, man. The entire town of Murfreesboro, Tennessee. The tailpipe of a 2001 Honda Odyssey, or the bisected left half of Ted Danson. This is rough. All right, I am going to have to kill the tailpipe. Because, well, or do I, oh man, I'm torn because, right, because the problem is, do I kill the tailpipe and marry the bisected left half of Ted Danson, hoping that that means I get half of his money? Or do I kill the left half of Ted Danson out of mercy because, it's either already dead, in which case there's no money for me to be gaining, and that's just gross, or he's somehow still alive in that state, and I'm just going to kill him to put him out of his misery. Which one do I do? I think I'm going to kill Ted Danson and be merciful. So I'm going to marry the tailpipe, and it will be a loving relationship, trust me. And then that just leaves me to have sex with the entire population. Wait, but there's children there. You bastard. How dare you? I can't have sex with the entire town of Murfreesboro, Tennessee. There are children there. That is not right. Oh, you suck. You suck. Fine. I will marry Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Oh, man. Oh. How big is a tailpipe of a 2001 Honda Odyssey? God darn it. Because I don't want to have sex with that. I certainly don't want to have sex with the bisected left half of Ted Danson. All right, I'll kill the tailpipe. I will marry Murfreesboro, Tennessee. I'll have sex with half of Ted Danson. Are you happy now? Oh. That was cruel. That's one of the best ones you've ever come up with, man. That was really good. Okay, that is the end of the Pod-O-Matic, which means I have to turn it over to GLaDOS now so she can give us a recap of this week's episode so far.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
no way.
And then I was all, we pretended we were going to murder you.
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2017 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week is Wonderful World by Sam Cooke. She Blinded Me with Science as performed by William Shatner. All the songs I use are available on iTunes. Check them out, buy them, enjoy them. Wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. Don't forget, this podcast, as I've mentioned already, is a proud member of the Nerd Pride Network. Angry Geeks versus Me Like Trivia, and of course, Nerd Pride Radio, quality nerd podcasting from quality nerd people. If you want to do something nice for my podcast, go tell people about it. Just force them to listen with you. Look, wait till they're trapped in the car with you and then just start playing it. And then they'll go, oh my God, whose sexy voice is that? And you'll say, well, that's Mike Jones. This is Nerd Pride Radio. You've never heard Nerd Pride Radio? Make them feel stupid for never listening before. And then they're hooked. All right. And then they'll always come back for more. It's awesome. Word of mouth is my bread and butter, people. All right. Remember, I am always looking for you listeners to do my work for me. Actually, the whole point is, look, if you enjoy it, then share it and let other people enjoy it. Okay, there we go. Remember, I'm always looking for you listeners to do my work for me. Don't forget to send me your questions or topics for the Pod-O-Matic. Watch out every week on the forums and on Facebook for listener betrayal. And if you have a really interesting nerd fact about an upcoming episode number, unlike the really crappy fact I had for 173 this week, send it to me. Save me all of that grueling research. Although, you know, it wasn't that grueling. If I had actually grueled over it, would have been better than 173 miles of railroad in 1845. God, that was lame. All right. My contact information, mike@nerdprideradio.com, @nerdprideradio on Twitter, facebook.com/nerdprideradio. But to be completely honest, the very best way to come talk to me is to sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. You sign up there, send me a message. We will hang out together and become best friends in the world. That's not a joke. We will. God, you'll love being best friends with me. I'm awesome. We'll have fun. And of course, it is now time for listener betrayal. At the beginning of every cast, before I start recording, I go out to Facebook and my forums at nerdpyradio.com/nerds, and I post up, hey guys, I am recording. anything you want to add to the podcast, put it here. I'll read it off at the end of the cast, which is what I'm doing right this moment. So, going out to Facebook, my first comment is from Nelly. And Nelly says, do you have your Gen Con badges? No, I don't have my Gen Con badges. But I've got my free pass. So I can pick them up. As long as I get them before it's time to sign up for events, I'm fine. She says, housing's tomorrow. Well, yeah, okay, but see, well, I already have lodging because Sarah Beth went out and got us a bunch of rooms way back last year. Like, right as we got back from the last con, she was buying rooms for this con, so, or whenever they opened up. And so we have rooms available, and again, I think we've got, so far, it is a crew of, I don't know, 9, 10, 11 people, and we've got like 4 rooms. So if our party grows, I think we've got a little bit of space, but either way, we've got a place to stay. So we're good on that. But yes, I'm going to be getting those badges very, very soon, because everyone's getting their tax money back. So I know my 2 sons at least have the cash to pay for theirs. I don't know if friend Alex has his, but anyway, that's neither here nor there. I'm so excited about Gen Con. You know how I love Gen Con. This is going to be a party and a half, and we're going to have such a good time. The more the merrier. It's going to be a lot more convoluted because, you know, previous ones we've gone as a small group, and it's essentially, you know, 2, 3, 4 people, and we just go everywhere together and do almost everything together. And this time, we're going to have to work out some logistics. But, you know, we've all got phones. We all stay in contact. We'll do plenty of pre-planning with, you know, what scheduled events we want to go to together, that kind of stuff, and it's going to be awesome. It's going to be really, really great. So looking forward to it. I can't wait to see you there, Nelly. It's going to be a good time. So next one is from Pat. And Pat says, have you ever played Arkham Horror? No, I've never played Arkham Horror. We should start a game on the boards. Yeah, we should, dude. Seriously, whatever it takes to do that, let's do it. Because, I mean, we've got Paranoia, which is running right now. And we've got my brother's game, which he said is starting up very shortly. He was sick for a while, so that's why we're delayed on his game. But his game is coming up shortly. We have our Thursday night game of Pathfinder. I think we've got some room for Arkham Horror in here. Let's do it. Seriously, put it together. Help me. I don't even know what Arkham Horror is. I mean, Arkham is all I know is from Batman. So, all right, hold on. Let me pause while I go look up Arkham Horror and make sure I'm not an idiot here. Hold on. And okay, yes, I get that I could be an idiot whether I know anything about Arkham Horror or not, that they're not necessarily related, but you get my point. All right. I did my research and, oh yeah, what a cooperative game of Lovecraftian horror. I'm all in on this. So, all I see is board game, Lovecraft investigation co-op. I'm in. Let's do whatever we need to do. This would be great. All right. That is it for Facebook. Done. So I go back to my forums and refresh because I know how this internet thing works. Oh, yeah. This is my danger of doing it on a Saturday night. Saturday is always problematic. Nobody wants to betray me tonight, but that's okay. I got a couple out on Facebook, and that is more than enough. We filled up great time. We had a good time here. You guys are the best. So I'm going to wrap it up, and I'll be back next week. I love you guys. You are spectacular. Say goodnight, R2. See you later.